Welcome to another virtual author event at the Poison Pen Bookstore. I'm John Charles, and today the Poison Pen is delighted to welcome back virtually one of our favorite authors, Ashley Weaver, whose new book, Locked in Pursuit, makes its literary debut today. Before we begin, the Poison Pen does have a limited number of signed copies of Locked in Pursuit coming to us, so if you'd like a copy after the event is over, give us a call or go online to the Poison Pen Bookstore, and we can supply you with a truly fabulous book while supplies last. Now I'd like to welcome Ashley Weaver.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
Thank you for joining us again. My first question as a reader to authors is, I'm always fascinated by your backstory because you were someone before you became a published author. What can you tell us about Ashley pre-publication?
Well, I've always loved books. And I've always loved writing. I always say, I think I wrote my first little storybook in elementary school. And I remember writing it on like my dad's printer paper from his computer and thinking how fun it was that I could take a story from my head and put it on paper, even though I think it was kind of plagiarized Bopsy Twins. But the idea of like wanting to write, that was something I always wanted to do. And I've worked in libraries since I was 14. I started an after-school job my freshman year of high school. And so I've been working in libraries ever since. And so I've just kind of my whole life revolves around books.
When did you decide I want to become published? And what was your path to publication like?
I always have to credit one of my friends because I always had the dream that I wanted to be an author one day, but it was kind of, you know, that faraway dream. And my friend and I started working on some stories together. And then when I finished, she said, now you're going to start applying for agents. And so she kind of pushed me into doing that. And I ended up finding an agent. And that was in, I think, 2011. And then my first book came out in 2014. So
that was Murder at the Brightwell. Is that correct?
Yes, Murder at the Brightwell. It's the first in the Amory Ames mysteries.
And what made you decide you want to write about Amory and her husband?
I actually had a dream and there was a character or a woman in it named Amory Ames. And that was the only thing I could remember from the dream. I didn't remember any other details, but when I woke up, I knew that would be a great name for a character. So I sat down and kind of started, I keep a document on my computer just called Ideas. And anytime I get a scrap of an idea or a few lines of dialogue or just, you know, anything that I want to remember for later, I'll put it all in that document. And then once I realize that it's something I really want to work on, it gets its own document. So I started working on this story and within a few pages, I knew I want to put this in its own document. It's going to be its own story. And it kind of all unfolded from there.
And what I found fascinating, well, one of the things about the series is it's about a marriage, but it's not the typically happy ever after marriage in many detective novels. There's some
Right.
bumps in the road to happily ever after for Avery and Milo.
Yes, I thought, just like you said, happily ever after, I kind of thought it would be fun if I took the idea of after happily ever after. And so they've had this kind of, it happens before the series starts, of course, but they had this sort of whirlwind courtship. They met and fell madly in love, and he's very handsome and she's very beautiful and they're, you know, wealthy and attractive, charming people. And, you know, so of course you think, oh, all's going to be well, but then kind of examining how, you know, making these impulse decisions can sort of have repercussions later on in the future and kind of how they deal with getting to know each other as a married couple after they've kind of already jumped into marriage.
So you wrote a number of books with Amory and Milo, and then you decided you wanted to start a new series. And what prompted that?
I got really into reading a lot of World War II nonfiction. With my reading, I kind of go in spurts of different things that I get really interested in. So I had read a book called Agent Zigzag by Ben McIntyre. And it was the story of a petty criminal who ended up getting arrested, and he was imprisoned on the Channel Islands, which were the only part of England that was ever occupied by the Germans. And so they took him out of prison and they said, we will make you a spy. Since you're British, you can go into England, get information for us, and we'll let you out of jail. And so he agreed to it. But then as soon as they sent him to England, he went to the authorities and said, the Germans expect me to spy on you. Do you want me to spy on them? And so he became a double agent. So I was really fascinated with the idea of someone who was a criminal in their life pre-war and sort of how they used the skills that they developed in that, you know, less noble career for a good cause during the war. And so that's kind of the, you know, the springboard for where Electra's story started developing.
And she's part of a crime family in London, and she's a safecracker. And there's something kind of, I mean, I guess if you were ranking criminals, safecrackers are kind of on the elegant end of the criminal occupation.
Yes, it's a little bit more, you know, behind the scenes. They're not going out and, you know, being violent or anything like that. They sneak into houses. And one of the things her uncle has always instilled in her about their escapades is you get in, get out, and no one knows you've been there, you know, until they discover their valuables are missing. So that's kind of, and their legitimate occupation is they do locksmithing during the day. So I say locksmiths by day and safecrackers by night. And so they supplement their income by doing these robberies on the side.
Which brings us to your latest book, Locked in Pursuit. What can you tell us about that book?
Well, Locked in Pursuit is the fourth book in the series. And in this book, Electra kind of finds herself at several different crossroads in her life. She, after the events of the previous book, Playing It Safe, she's kind of had a sort of, actually in each of the books, but she's had some dangerous encounters with the enemy. She's had her life put in peril a few times. And she's also, throughout the series, working to uncover the mystery of her past, because her mother, which you learn in the first book, was arrested and sentenced to be hanged for killing her father. But Electra believes that her mother was innocent, and so she's trying to figure out who might have wanted to kill her father and prove her mother's innocence as the series develops. And so she's learned some kind of bombshell information about that in the previous book. So kind of in this book, and Locked in Pursuit, she's at these crossroads kind of where her past and her future are intersecting, and she's trying to decide who she wants to be as a person. And you know, kind of she's enjoying fighting for a good cause, as opposed to her life before, when, you know, she was a criminal. And so she's kind of having to think about what will happen once the war is over, where she wants to go. And then she's also kind of at a crossroads romantically between kind of this old family friend who's involved in the criminal world, or her handler in the military intelligence, Major Ramsey, who, you know, there's a spark between them too. And he kind of represents for her maybe a different way of life in the future.
The mystery in this particular book in the series, and I thought it was really fascinating and brilliant the way you did it. There's
Thank
a
you.
series of robberies, and most people just ignore them. But Electra is looking at these robberies and thinking something's not right, because people are going in and there's all these valuables that they're not taking with them.
Right. She is looking at it from, you know, the criminal aspect of how her family would operate under those situations, or people, you know, other people in the criminal underworld that she knows. They know a lot of people and a lot of different criminal associates that they've had dealings with in the past. And she knows how they work, and sort of the kind of network of underground secrets that are passed along. She hasn't heard anything about these robberies that way. And so she starts to think that maybe they're kind of a cover for something else.
And it turns out she's right. And this is interesting too, because it's all linked back to a particular flight from Lisbon. And Lisbon was really played an interesting role in World War II. Can you kind of talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Yes. Yeah. So Lisbon during World War II was a neutral country. And so they, you know, for all intents and purposes, officially were out of the war, but it was an excellent place for a lot of these different players to meet and get information. And you know, in some books I'd read about it said that you'd have spies from one country eating dinner at a table next to spies from another country. There was just all these, and, you know, some people kind of knew who was operating next to them and what the information they could pass on. And so it was just really an interesting time in the country. Kind of everybody was, you know, going rogue, for lack of a better phrase. There was just a lot happening. And so there's a lot of potential for intelligence and things that can come out of the country because of that.
Which brings us to, you're a librarian by day, so does that kind of give you a leg up in researching your historical mysteries? And what sources have you found particularly useful?
I think being a librarian does help. It definitely has helped me with the way that I look for information. You know, I've taken classes and things on how to research and that sort of thing. So It's definitely, I think, a benefit for my writing career. And there's a lot of interesting sources I found. I read, now I'm not going to be able to remember the title of it, but I read a really good book on the history of Lisbon during the war in particular, and kind of how all those different elements were layered in. And then found several good articles online. You can find a lot of, you know, old newspaper articles, or one thing I always refer back to that I found particularly useful for the series is I found online a map of all the places where bombs were dropped in England, or in mostly in London during World War II. And so, especially during the Blitz, you know, which was that, I think about a 3-month period, something like that. And so all of the little red dots represented a bomb. And if you do the zoom in view, you know, you can see the space between them. But if you do the zoom out view, they're just all overlapped, all the bombs that fell. And so it's really fascinating to look at that kind of information. And it really gives you a sense of the impact of it.
Your series are set in the 30s and the 40s. What about that time period when you were writing them? Why did you think this is the period that I want to set these books in? What about that time period draws you in as a writer?
I kind of always attribute my love of those periods to growing up watching a lot of old movies. I grew up watching a ton of movies set in the 30s and 40s. And so that was just kind of, well, with the Amory Ames series also, I read a lot of Agatha Christie, and that sort of 1930s in England is the golden age of mysteries. And so I was always drawn to that setting and that kind of elements of that. But the 30s and 40s were really interesting. Growing up, you know, watching the movies and things, you'd see the, you know, the men in tuxedos and the women in evening gowns and fancy nightclubs and that kind of thing, or like, you know, Casablanca for the World War II element. And so the kind of glamour of those different things. But then as I got older and started understanding more of, you know, all the complex layers of the political situations and all the things that were going on, it really became even more fascinating. So I've just always kind of been drawn to those decades.
You think it's also kind of the stakes were a bit higher during the 30s and the 40s, especially the 40s. They call
Definitely.
It the last war that was, there was clear cut right and wrong sides.
Right. Yeah. It's easy to, you know who's the good guys and who's the bad guys. But then of course it's been interesting with this series with Elektra, because before the war, she would have maybe been one of the bad guys in this mystery series. You know, she's the one doing the robbing, maybe the one you'd want your main character to catch, but because of what she can do during the war, she can use those skills, and it kind of flips and she becomes one of the good guys, which has been fun to explore.
Mm-hmm. She's very complex in that sense. How do you keep up with or acquire the skills to be realistic in the series about locksmithing and safe cracking? I mean, have you tried it yourself? Are there YouTube tutorials? I mean, how do you get into that particular aspect of the research?
Yes, I read, when I first started the series, I read several different articles, and there were several YouTube videos that I watched just to see kind of lock picking and safe cracking in action. And then I did buy online a lock picking kit, and sort of my big ambition was to get really good at it so I could demonstrate it. But I've never mastered it. So that was kind of a pipe dream, I guess, but I still have the set, so maybe one day. But it's harder than it looks, especially the safe cracking, because I said, you know, especially as I mentioned, watching movies from, you know, 30s and 40s or even like the 50s, they just kind of listen to the lock and turn the dial a little bit and would snap open. But learning actually all the different elements that go in to cracking a safe is almost sort of like a very complex math problem. And so that was really kind of an eye-opening when I started researching that.
Did you know when you first started the series out, you named your protagonist Elektra, that you were going to have the secondary mystery kind of threaded throughout about her parents, and that it was going to kind of be reminiscent of Greek mythology or maybe Greek myths in a way?
I don't think I had when I very first thought of the character's name, I'm not sure that that was something that was, you know, foremost in my mind. But as I kind of started developing her backstory, it kind of fit into place that it could kind of click pretty well with the story of what happened with her parents. So it's kind of a happy coincidence, I guess.
I was going to give you credit for being brilliant, but we'll just go with happy circumstance. A question I have about both series is, I think Amory is up to book seven or something like that, and this is the fourth. Do you always know when you're starting out a series that it's going to run this long? And how
No.
author,
Oh. Oh, sorry, I jumped right in there.
that's okay. And how as an author do you balance continuing these stories throughout the series with there'll be readers who pick up book five or book four, and they may not necessarily have access to the information in the other books. And one thing I find interesting working in a bookstore and formerly in a library is there are some people who will not read a series unless they can get book one. There's others who are like, no, I'm going to
Definitely.
try it with the book that I have rather than wait 3 weeks or whatever it is for this other book to come
Right.
in. So how do you balance those two almost conflicting demands?
Well, to answer your first question, I don't usually know how long the series is going to last. I've had contracts with my publisher from anywhere from one book at a time to three books at a time. So it just kind of depends on, sort of what their goals for the series and that sort of thing are, and they kind of play out as I go. So I sort of try to keep the books to where, they can wrap things up as needed or kind of let them play out a little bit longer. As far as the series go, with readers, I usually try to put enough information into each book that they can get the idea of what's happening without giving away any of the major like twists or who the bad guy is or that kind of thing from the earlier books. So you can still read the book and hopefully be interested enough to go back and read the others without, the key elements being revealed. You may know a little bit more how, certain relationships are developing or that kind of thing if you start later in the series, but you still won't, the mystery won't be ruined.
So I guess I'm correct in thinking that if a reader comes up to in the Poison Pen and we have the third book in the series, it's fine to give them that book. They're going to be able to read that and enjoy it on its own and potentially go back and pick up the others.
Yeah, they should be able to do that. I mean, ideally, I would say to read in order just because of the way that Electra's relationships with the people in her life are developing and the way her own sense of who she is has changed throughout the series as the war goes on. But yes, each of the mysteries can be read as a standalone.
Let's talk about your writing process a little bit for mysteries, because if I'm correct, you described it as kind of the patchwork quilt approach to
Yes.
writing. And I'm just fascinated because to me, I would think they're a mystery. You have to know what's going on. How can you write that way? But authors do.
It's just I've tried kind of outlining and sort of going in order before, and it just doesn't really work for the way my mind works. I kind of like to jump around, and I say that's I guess maybe a way that I sometimes can get around writer's block is if I'm stuck in one area, I'll just jump to another scene and work on that for a while, and then sort of come back. So usually what I do is usually have a few ideas in each book of certain events that are going to happen, certain like plot points that I need to hit. And so knowing that, I can write those scenes. And so in a way, I'm kind of creating a large outline for myself in a way because I know that I'm going to do this scene, and this scene, and then I just kind of have to tie in between. So in the end, it all kind of comes together, hopefully, in the way I envisioned.
Have you ever surprised yourself as an author, like, wow, I didn't think this person was going to be the murderer?
Yes, more than once. There's been a few times where, I was kind of thinking about one person and then it just made more sense for another person. And, oh, sorry, you got to sacrifice you to be the killer. So, yeah, it has happened that it kind of just sort of fits better for somebody else to be the culprit.
How do you fit in writing with a full-time job? Because I would think a lot of people would be inspired by the idea that you can write books and have another career.
Yes, definitely. I do most of my writing at night. I work full time at a library. And so I'm a night owl. I write in the evenings when I'm, after dinner or that kind of thing. And sometimes I'll take a month. I'll pick a month and say, I'm going to try and do 1,000 words every day this month. And then I'll have a good 30,000 word base and to sort of go from there. But usually, I mean, there's been a year between each of my books. And so that's a pretty good amount of time. And And so just sort of plug away at it in the evenings, and it's been good so far.
And if I'm correct, you're a fan of, and I'm going to get it wrong, but is it NaNoWriMo or?
Oh, NaNoWriMo.
Yes.
So that's every year in November. It's a nonprofit organization, and you can sign up for it. And every month in November, you write a 50,000 word novel. So it translates to 1,667 words a day. And I think it's, I want to say it's been 14 years in a row that I've participated.
Yeah.
And so I always say that that's something I really encourage people who want to write to do, because it's a really good, fast lesson on how to like sort of work within a deadline and kind of, you know, develop your plot as you're writing and think about how you want everything to come together. And it kind of, in a nutshell, you know, it ends up being more quantity than quality, but that's okay, because a lot of times people are stuck on just getting things on the page. And so you can always go back and edit.
Okay.
So I'm always telling people they should do NaNoWriMo and trying to talk people into writing a novel with me in November, because then I figure, you know, you get your story out, and then you go back and edit it later, and you end up with a 50,000 word novel, which is, you know, generally they want it to be a little longer for publication, 70,000, 75,000, something like that. So you can go back and fill in the things that you left out and edit, and then get your manuscript ready. And actually, the first Electra book was a NaNoWriMo novel. So I did the first one. Once I had the idea, I wrote it, you know, real fast, 50,000 words of it in November, and then went from there.
You've been writing for a while now. What have you discovered about the business of publishing that has surprised you the most?
Oh, that's an interesting question. The business of publishing. I don't know. It's been really interesting. I guess one thing that, you know, has kind of surprised me at first and surprises a lot of people when I tell them is how, you know, you don't just turn in your novel and it's published the next day.
Okay.
You know, there's a lot of steps that it has to go through. And when I remember when I first got my agent, she told me horse and buggy is fast in the publishing industry. Things happen kind of slowly, and you have to sort of, you know, be patient and wait and meet each step of the process. And so I think that's something that surprised me at first, and then also something that other people are kind of surprised about, because, you know, I just turned in the next novel at the beginning of this month. And so then a couple people assumed today that that was the novel that was coming out. And I was like, no, that one won't be out till next year. So
well, I think that's kind of understandable, because in a decade or more since you first started out, there's been this whole kind of explosion of indie publishing and things
right.
that we didn't know could be done or weren't done. Now authors are writing a book a month and putting them up and
that's
getting
true.
out.
Yeah.
Have you ever been tempted by the idea of that, or you prefer a more traditional route?
Well, I've known a couple of people who have self-published, and I know it, like, it's a lot of, there's different work on different ends, you know, different amounts of work that you have to do. And so a lot of them are doing a lot of, you know, they have to do their own cover designs and their own, you know, hiring editors and that kind of thing. And so it's a lot of more work on that end, you know, as opposed to you get the benefit of maybe it being a little quicker, but then also you're having to put in a lot of effort in that direction. And so it's really kind of interesting to weigh the pros and cons of, you know, compared to some people that I've spoken to have weighed, you know, decided if they wanted to go ahead and self-publish or try and go a more traditional route. So far I've been happy with what I've been doing, and, you know, I've been putting out a book a year, and that's probably, you know, I can't manage too much more than that at this point. So, but it's definitely interesting, you know, an interesting topic for sure.
Has it impacted your work at the library, indie publishing, in terms of acquisition?
No, I wouldn't say too much. It may be something that maybe is more impactful. I'm in a pretty small rural library. And so, you know, maybe bigger libraries would probably maybe see more of an impact from that.
I would imagine, and it could be wrong, but you, more than some authors, have a window into the importance of the library market, because so many authors think in terms of book sales, but they don't realize that can also happen in the library.
Right. Yeah, definitely. I'm always excited to see my book on library shelves. And, you know, I think maybe there's some people who think like, oh, well, if a library has it, then it's only one sale. But that's, you know, I've seen, you know, the importance of people love checking out a book and then being so excited about it and telling all their friends about it and recommending it. And so I think libraries are so important for promoting books.
Now that you've reached the point where you are, if you could go back to when you were first starting out as an author, what advice would you give yourself?
Let me see. I think for one thing, I would tell myself don't stress out so much. I'm a big stressor, or especially was when I was starting, you know, every little thing was like very stressful and very new, and so just kind of, you know, going with the flow and learning things as they come, and you know, you don't have to learn everything at once, you don't have to know everything at once. It, you know, takes time to become comfortable and, you know, in an area, and so I think that's one thing I would have advised younger me.
One of the other things that can really sell a book is the title and the cover. And I have to admit, I was really quite, I didn't strike me at first. It took me a little while to take it in. But the titles for your Electra McDonald novels are really quite clever. They're all
Thank
keyed
you.
into locksmithing and safe cracking. And was that your idea? Was it your publisher's? Was it a kind of a merger between the two of you?
I think it was kind of a my editor, I think it was my editor and I kind of had discussed different title, you know, possibilities, and that sort of ended up being the avenue that we went with. And so now it's kind of, you know, the further you get into the series, the more words we've used up. So it's kind of an interesting challenge as each new book comes out to try and figure out what we're going to call it. But they've been, you know, really fun so far. And I think they, each of them has, you know, even though it's kind of a little bit of a pun, has worked well with the, you know, title and subject matter of the book. So it's worked out pretty well.
And the covers are also very evocative of that time period. They really capture kind of the romance, a little bit of the glamour, a little bit of the danger. Do you have a lot of input into how covers are presented for the books?
I don't have too much input. They usually send me a sketch, you know, and then I can put in input and that kind of thing. Or sometimes they'll ask me, you know, do you have any ideas for what you want? But I'm not super artistic, so I kind of usually I'm just happy. You know, I've been very fortunate. I've loved every single one of my covers. Every time they send me one, I open the email and gasp. So I've been really fortunate, and they're all beautiful, I think.
Is the series are your both of your series available in other formats like audio?
Yes, they're both series are available on audio.
And what is the process for that like for you as an author? Do you get to provide, because I know some authors can help select the narrators, others just turn it entirely over to their publisher.
Yes, they did send me some like audition or like audio clips for the second series. And so actually the narrator for the Amory Ames series is also the narrator for the Electra McDonald series. She's excellent. Her name is Allison Larkin. And she sent some clips over of doing herself doing different accents because Amory Ames is very high society, kind of polished, you know, polished accents. And Electra has more of sort of a London accent, a little bit more from the working class kind of thing. And so she sent clips of herself doing different accents. And so I thought that was really interesting how she did that. And she's so talented at it. And so she manages, even reading both series, to give both of them a very different feel, which I think is impressive.
That's great. Let's pivot a little bit and talk about Ashley as a reader, because you've been a reader longer than you've been a writer. And is it fair to say that you fell in love with mysteries back with Richard Scarry's Great Steamboat Mystery?
Yes. I always go back to Richard Scarry and the Great Steamboat Mystery, something like that. That was one of my favorites when I was a kid. And like I mentioned before, I thought, you know, I had liked the Bobbsey Twins. I read Nancy Drew, Encyclopedia Brown, Trixie Belden, all of those mysteries. And I'm not sure what first drew me to mysteries. I don't know why it was that particular genre that really captured my imagination. But ever since I was, you know, as since I've been a reader, I've been a mystery reader, and so I always love looking back and, you know, seeing how the reading choices I made and how they've kind of developed and sort of how they influenced my writing as well.
Are you still a mystery reader today?
I am, yes. I read a lot of everything. I do the cataloging here at the library, And so I see all the books as they come in, so I get first dibs. And so generally my to be read pile is stacked pretty high.
I'm guessing you're also a fan of, given that you've introduced a thread of romance into both of your series, romance might be one of your genres that you read.
Yes, I do really enjoy romance. I like I read a lot of the Georgette Heyer, sort of the contemporary of Agatha Christie, and so sort of that kind of classic romance. I really enjoy her writing, and so and then I'll read a Regency romance novel here and there. I like to include that element, like you said, and I think it's sort of like with the mysteries, that secondary element of romance is another thing that you can kind of look forward to as the series progresses, seeing where the relationship goes, and kind of even with the case of Amory and Milo in the first series, who are already married, they're sort of overcoming these obstacles in their marriage and hitting these little bumps along the way. And so I guess I find, the process of relationships developing really interesting to explore in writing.
That's interesting. How do you find, I always find this fascinating, how do you find new books to put on your list, think authors that you should watch for? I know some people rely on social media like Goodreads, others have friends that share similar tastes. When it comes to Ashley and you're trying to find something good to read, what are the sources you turn to?
I have a lot of different sources. I read a lot of or look through a lot of
Review source.
publications on that kind of thing, right? Publishers Weekly and that kind of thing, since I do some ordering here for the library. And then I am a big Goodreads user. I keep track of all my books on there. And then I also have a book club, actually, that I started in college. We
Wow.
have met every month since June of 2006.
Good
And
enough.
so we're pretty proud of our record. And it's a, so these are women that I've basically kind of grown up with. We met in our 20s, but come a long way since then. And so we recommend books to each other all the time, and we kind of have diverse reading tastes, but we usually find that there's a lot of overlap in what we like to read, and we push each other to read things we maybe wouldn't generally pick up ourselves. And so that's like a really good way, I think, to find new reads and explore things that maybe wouldn't be your first impulse to read, but then you find you really end up enjoying.
Is that a virtual or in-person group or?
It's in person.
Wow, that's
We went
amazing.
virtual during COVID.
Yeah.
So we did, but we did Zoom meetings every month, so we didn't miss any months, but we're back to meeting every month now. So
That's very
it's been fun.
impressive. What are some of the books you've chosen?
Oh no, now I'm not going to be able to remember any of them. We've done everything. We do a lot of things that come out that are popular reads, or we've done a lot of the classic novels. I think the very first novel we did was A Picture of Dorian Gray.
Wow.
And then because a lot of us were English majors and we were in college then, and so sort of we started out with that, and then we kind of I'm trying to think of, like, I can't even remember what the last book we selected was.
Same thing happens to me. Your mind just goes blank.
Yes. I'm trying to remember, but you'd think with 18 years of selections, I'd be able to pull up a few. But
What was your
and then
favorite book that you do you have a favorite that your club discussed?
oh, a favorite. I don't know. We have oh, I remember, like, okay, for example, we did Life of Pi when that came when that was very popular. And so, like, that's one of my friend's favorite books. And so that, we all have come up with different favorites throughout the way. Or it's interesting to see if somebody really loves one and then somebody else doesn't really care for it, kind of, or even how, it's interpreted differently, so by different readers. So that's always fun to see if we're going to have the same opinions or not.
You're right. It's fascinating. I have two very good friends, and we both had, well, we all had different reactions to Donna Tartt's The Goldfinch. And
Okay.
you would think we all would like that book, but no, it provoked
Yes.
different reactions from the different members of our group.
Yeah, sometimes I'm so surprised because I'll go and, oh, I'm so excited to talk about this. This is amazing. And then I'm like, oh, I didn't like it at all. But I think, I always think, the same with people who ask about, if you get negative reviews or people don't like your books. I always think everything is not everyone's cup of tea. Not everyone likes the same thing. I don't like every book I read, so.
Yeah.
you can't expect other people to like every book they read. And so it's just kind of that's, I think that's what makes, especially as a librarian, it makes reading so interesting, is because books can be so many different things to so many different people.
It doesn't seem like it would be so complex, but reading is a very complex activity. It can depend on when you read a particular book, your mood can be different at different times. There's all these different factors that come into it.
Yep, your past and your preferences and your, the preconceptions, that kind of thing. That's happened to me before, where I'm reading a book and I'm like, do I love this book because it's amazing, or because it found me at just the right time? And sometimes it doesn't matter, if a book finds you at the right time, it's
That's
really a good experience.
now, in addition to writing, you've are part of a group, if I'm correct, called Sleuths Through Time.
Sleuths in Time.
Sleuths in Time.
Yes, it's
Can
a
you
group
tell us
of
about that?
yes, it's I think eight of us are we're mystery writers, and we write historical mysteries set in different time periods. And so we have a newsletter if anyone wants to sign up for that. If you enjoy my books, it's kind of in a similar vein, more like I would say the sort of cozy leaning historical mysteries. And we have a Facebook group that we're pretty active on. If you wanted to follow our, if anyone wanted to follow our Facebook page, it's Sleuths in Time Authors.
How has social media impacted, or has it, your progress as an author, your success as an author?
I am not a big social media person myself. I'll do, I'll try and do postings, or I like to post if my fellow writer friends have books coming out, or acquaintances and that I know that have books coming out. I like to be able to promote other writers. I'm not on my social media maybe as much as I should be. I don't know, but I really enjoy, I love interacting with readers. That's really fun. It's just I guess coming up with, the content and that kind of thing is not really my forte, but I'm you can find me on all the, most of the platforms. I'm not on TikTok. I say I'm too old for that. At least at this point, I haven't taken the time and energy to go over there yet. But I am, I check my social media fairly often, and post sporadically. So I am there.
What are your what is your website address for readers that want to learn more?
My website is, I believe, ashley-weaver.com, and then I'm on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram as well.
So far, you've written historical mysteries. Have you ever wanted to write something different?
Generally, most of the ideas that come to me take place in the past. And I would have said, at least several years ago, that that's because I preferred to read historicals, but I do read a lot more contemporary now than I used to. But I think I just like the element of when I'm writing, I'm traveling to a different time and place, and it's interesting to sort of explore a time period that's not my own, I guess, is the best way I could say it. I enjoy kind of stepping out of now and exploring a different time. So never say never, but that's just sort of my general preference. When ideas kind of spring into my head, they're usually not set in the present.
There's some advantages to writing historical mysteries and historical fiction. One of them, as you mentioned, is the ability to kind of you learn a little bit about the past while you're enjoying a story. So it's kind of a painless way to get a little bit of knowledge.
Definitely.
And this could be just on my part, but I would think as an author, if you set a mystery in the past, a certain time period, the emphasis is more on solving the mystery through logic, deduction, through following clues. If it's set today, it's almost like CSI comes in and scans everything.
Yes.
There's the murderer. It's like, well, okay, we're done.
Yes, that's definitely an advantage, I think, with historical mysteries, is you can have kind of your. And then, probably now you're not going to have too much opportunity for somebody just kind of on the scene to get involved in an investigation. I mean, it does happen in stories, and it's still fun, but I like that, idea of somebody sort of being able to kind of, nose their way into the investigation and help the police solve the mystery or that kind of thing. But yeah, definitely the internet and cell phones and all that kind of thing make it a lot easier to solve a mystery, I would say. And so I do enjoy that element of, we don't know where you were, and we can't trace you, and you know, nobody had a cell phone on them to, you know, ping their location or anything like that.
And motives too can change over time. In Locked in Pursuit, Elektra has a friend who, I guess, hires her, that's not the exact right word, but to retrieve some incriminating letters. I mean, back then that was a big deal in the 1940s. Today it's like people would be posting them on the internet.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, definitely the kind of the society's rules were different. And that's kind of, you know, that's something I explored in the Emery Ames series too, as she and Milo kind of, you know, upper class, high society people, how they kind of had to work within society's limitations, especially Emery as a woman having to, you know, use her place in her world to be able to solve the mystery, and kind of, you know, the relationships that she's developed with people and the people she knows, and, you know, her contacts and that kind of thing. And so it is really interesting to see how things have changed. And like you said, the letters, you know, would have been scandalous then, you know, could ruin somebody's life, or, you know, there was no telling what could happen. And so I like that element of having to work within those, you know, strictures of the past.
In some ways, it's kind of like sonnets provide a structure for you to be creative, and the setting provides you with that kind of structure to work within it.
Exactly.
Before we run out of time, can you tell us, or are you, it's up to you, would you be willing to tell us about what's next from you? Can we expect more books?
Yes, I just turned in the next book in the Elektra McDonald series. So I don't want to give too much away, but something happens at the end of this book that will point you in the direction of what will be happening in the next book. So I had a lot of fun writing that. I just turned it in. And so now I'm kind of taking a little bit of a mental break before I get notes back from my editor. So that's where I'm at right now.
What is your relationship with your editor? I'm assuming that it's collaborative.
Yes, she's my editor for this book is going to be different because my editor just had a baby. And so I'm kind of going to be working with somebody new, which I'm excited. She's a lovely person, but my usual editor and I have a really good working relationship, and one thing like I particularly love is she's from London. And so if I anytime make any sort of faux pas with my, you know, British words or that kind of thing, she can always catch that. And so, but she's very supportive and she always has great insights. So I'm lucky to have worked with her for sure.
Are you willing to say anything about whether there'll be more from Amory?
There is not anything planned at this point, but with her, I always say never because she's still kind of ambling around in my head. So we'll see. We'll see if anything else ever comes of it.
Have you ever thought about doing short stories with your characters?
I haven't. I did write one e-novella for the Emery Ames series, which was Intrigue in Capri. It was set in Italy. It was Intrigue in Capri. And so it was just sort of a short little novella that was only available in e-format between a couple of the novels. And so I did that. That was kind of fun. And I've, you know, toyed with the idea of doing that. I wrote more short stories kind of growing up in high school and that kind of thing, wrote for fun. Now I think it'd be more of a challenge to kind of put all my ideas into like such a short format, but I mean, kind of a fun challenge, maybe someday.
There you go. Well, I can't believe how quickly our time has flown by. The Poison Pen has been very fortunate to have with us author Ashley Weaver, whose new book, Locked in Pursuit, will be out, or is out, today in bookstores and libraries near you. Thank you, Ashley, for taking time to join us.
Thank you for having me. This was so fun.
And thank you for tuning in to another virtual author event at the Poison Pen Bookstore.
Hello. We hope you're enjoying our programs and podcasts with authors. We'd like to expand them, and your help would be appreciated. Please make a donation at poisonedpenfoundation.org. 100% of the proceeds will go to help connect authors with readers in this difficult time. Thank you.